Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Final Wednesday of the very aptly titled Dead Zone, that time of the summer where there really is not much to talk about. A week from tonight, we will be on the eve of training camp, and so we will have plenty of storylines. You know, Maurice Jones-Drew, Justin Blackmon, all of those things will start to roll out in the next week. Until then, phone lines are open for you to join John Osher and myself, who is sitting in Jeff Loggeman's chair. Nice to have you.
We have weeded out the extra, and we are down to the nitty-gritty.
Absolutely. Yeah, Loggs is out in the woods somewhere. Baselli is
out in the woods somewhere.
Well, he's recovering. Yeah, he might be mentally right now with all the pain meds he's probably on.
I hope he's feeling better.
Had some hip replacement surgery this week, and so it's good news that he is on his way home. So it's just me and John, and then, of course, you at 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. John Dineen's alongside, getting ready for the football season. And, of course, we've got Joe Fortunato here taking your calls and passing them through. So the most pressing piece of news is that you have debuted the top 25 Jaguars of all time on Jaguars.com.
Yeah, we should get into...
I'm being slightly facetious of sort of.
Sure, I mean, we should get into Josh Scobie signing later on in the show. That might be a little more pertinent. But
I was trying to lay it up for you.
Well, and, I botched the layup, if you will.
Yeah, that's right. I can put the ball on the tee, but I can't make it swing straight.
And, we debuted it today, and, numbers 1 through 25. And
hey, that's a baseball reference?
No, put it on the tee. It's a golf reference.
Oh.
Joe, the Phillies game might be, or you might want to go back to ESPN.
Baseball, what?
Can I tell you a quick story real quick?
Sure.
Just because this is one of those stories. I took my kids. I was Miami over the weekend. I took my kids to a Marlins game. Got great seats down the third baseline. And midway through the third, quarter, inning, right? That's what they call them in baseball. My six-year-old turns to me and says, Dad, when do they actually play the game?
Right.
When does this start?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just a complete aside, and we'll go back to football.
But it's something
that's why people are hungry for the top 25 right now.
Yes,
because they can't turn to baseball.
Right, right.
Unless you're a Phillies fan.
If you're a hardcore baseball fan, you're with it. If not, it's,
Right. You're looking for the top 25 players of all time in Jaguars history.
So, sure. Yeah, and it was an interesting thing to do. Brian, you know all about it because you were kind enough to come in and do the, be the moderator or the voice of the Jaguars, which you are.
I was willing to steer the conversation.
Yeah, and we had my friend Pete Prisco, my friend Gene Frenette, Dan Hicken, Jeff Loggeman was on it. We had a really good panel, and most of those guys came in and we talked about the wheres and the whys, and I think it turned out really well. I think the conversations we had about the players were good. And I think it was fun for everybody to sort of relive some old memories about the team.
And there's so many of them sitting out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you sit down. We did tomorrow's segment. Is it tomorrow's segment?
Right. We did 16 through 20 today with Pete and Gene.
Yeah, we did with Pete. Yeah, and Pete brings a perspective, and Gene Frenette brings a perspective. Obviously, Dan, has his own little niche, having been there in Chicago that day so many years ago, and it's fun. So it's 5 days in a row now. Or are you going to do?
It'll be
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Then Monday and Tuesday. Monday and Tuesday. Wanted to time it to be Tuesday. We figure Wednesday will be a day where everybody starts talking about training camp, talking about the season. So we wanted to kind of end the off season with with a flourish. And I think it's the style of show that we're going to be doing a lot more of on Jaguars.com. Patrick Cavanaugh is our video content producer now. He did a nice job setting it up, and I think you're going
to
see more things like this on Jaguars.com moving forward.
Let's take this first segment. Let's take this first segment and talk about what you're planning for the fall.
A lot of the old coverage, the Ozone will obviously be there, Joe. we'll be covering stories the same way we always did. But with Patrick Cavanaugh coming on board, I think we're going to be doing – we've always done video. I think it'll be a lot more streamlined. We'll have more regular content. We'll have, I think it'll be more entertaining. We've got a lot of ideas coming up. So it's going to be a fun season for us.
Obviously, training camp will keep you hopping starting next week.
Yeah, we may cover that.
You may not stop covering it, is my point.
And I think that's when you'll start seeing, you know, we have some daily ideas in terms of, you know, doing a daily mailbag feature sort of akin to the Ozone, as sort of a complement to that. And there's some other things we're going to be doing that, you know, we'll surprise with as we get closer to the, you know, to the actual debut date.
You got some great photos. I mean, I'm watching this. I can't hear it, but I'm watching it as we're talking here. And, you know, some of the shots, there's one right now with it's got to be the 99 game against Tennessee with Mike kicking from Brian Barker's hold, Mike Hollis kicking. You know, I mean, there's just some of those moments you remember. When you watch, when you see the photos, you remember if you were there, where you were listening to the game, where you were watching the game, if you were being rained on, if you were smart enough to get out of the rain, whatever it may have been. So it's a great walk down memory lane for people who are old enough to remember it.
As I said last week, it was neat for me because I've got a, you know, 9 or 10 year gap in coverage. I stopped covering the team in 2000 and came back last year. So it was a chance for me, through seeing how other guys voted, to sort of get a better appreciation for, you know, John Henderson, Marcus Stroud, for the first part of Rasheen's career here. I knew about those guys having covered the Colts, but I knew about them from a distance. And I had covered Marcus when he got drafted here, and I left shortly after that draft. So it was sort of neat to see where people considered him on the list and where some of these guys fit into Jaguars history. And, you know, not surprisingly, the very top is dominated by guys who played from 96 to 99.
Yeah.
But that's not surprising. I mean, that's
best year in the team's history.
Yeah, that's when they, you know, sort of peaked, and they've had some, you know, stops and starts since.
I've seen, you know, that there are a number of comments underneath the story that's posted here. Have you heard from any of the players?
Not yet.
There's some guys who live here in town, you know.
Yeah. Well, and my guess is we might hear a little more as, you know, more of it's unveiled. But I honestly wasn't that surprised with how a lot of it played out. And, you know, you hope what people remember is that it's fun and it's eight guys sort of – you're making a list. There wasn't a lot of – I didn't see a whole lot of things where I went, wow. I mean, it sort of played out as you expected. I think most people could probably project – you know, the top five pretty close. And I don't think that would be that many surprises with the top 10. I mean, I think it's a good list. And on a list like this, you're always going to have, you know, guys who are, you know, lower than they thought they should be. But that's part of the game. And I hope it's, you know, perceived as fun for most people.
All right. So today, 25 through 21. 21. Tomorrow, 20 through 16.
Yeah, we'll go five at each day. And as you were very good at just then, it goes five. And then,
I had to think, though.
Really, you're good.
I had to work that one. All right, so we'll take a break here, and you can follow this for the next couple of days on Jaguars.com. And obviously, as we get closer to camp, get geeked up for the coverage that you'll find there. I think Patrick Kavanaugh, and he may or may not be listening, he's a talented kid. And
yeah,
he brings a lot to you. Folks should be excited about having him on board.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a strong addition. I think we all knew that.
You betcha. All right, folks, that'll do it for the first segment. We come back with more Jaguars this week. John Osher, Brian Sexton, Joe Fortunato sitting here with you this evening. And Joe, you're not actually sitting. You're about to start speaking.
I will, Brian Sexton. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out on Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. More of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, season tickets, single game tickets for the Jaguars 2012 preseason are on sale right now. And if you do want season tickets, single game tickets for the season. Say that again. Let's just start.
Okay, start the whole card over, buddy.
Hi. Single game tickets for the Jaguars 2012 preseason are on sale right now. Single game seats for the regular season go on sale August 1st at 9 a.m. For more info, call 633-2000. Visit jaguars.com/tickets.
Now,
that hurt. That was painful.
Just as an appreciation, how many years have you been in radio broadcasting?
This is, you know, we're doing the affiliate handbook.
Yeah.
So we update it, you know, each year and keep adding years to it. This is 30.
30 years in radio.
And I can't read.
No, you can't. You maybe glasses is what I'm suggesting.
Okay.
And since it's radio, no one will know you have them on.
That's true.
Can anybody recommend a good optometrist? All right. Moving right along, Josh Scobie's got his deal. Thanks, Joe.
No, Brian, thank you.
What's the score of the Phillies game?
They're top of the 10th. They're up 3-1.
Who are they playing?
Take that, JK. Dodgers.
Okay. Obviously in Los
Angeles.
Going
for the sweep.
Will that put them in first place?
Yeah. They'll be the best last place team in the league.
Everybody listening just can't wait to see what the final is, so please give us an update when you get it. All right, Josh Scobie's deal done this week. There was really not much drama around this, was there? Although to read some of the comments to the Ozone and to, you know, hear some comments this week, you know, there were some people that genuinely thought maybe Josh wasn't going to get a deal done.
I wrote earlier in the week that I was struck by how worried people seemed over this. And I get that Josh was concerned about it, and I get that the team was concerned about it because there were certainly bookkeeping and salary cap things involved with it. But the reality was he was going to play. And, you know, Josh made a comment a couple weeks ago along the lines of, oh, this could affect how I really kick. And this, you know, during the press conference on Monday, he kind of said he regretted saying that because, as everybody who knows Josh, and I know him a little bit, you probably know him much better than I do, he was not going to tank the season. He was not going to kick poorly. And none of these guys who are under the tag, I've come across very few players who won't say during the offseason it's going to be a distraction. But if they're worth signing, it's not going to be a distraction during the season. They get in there. Once the season starts, it becomes about team. It becomes about football. It becomes about what these guys are all about, what they're wired to do. And Josh was going to have a good year with plenty of motivation, whether he signed the tag or not. Good for him because he's a good guy and he got it done. Good for the fans. They like it. It makes sense to have gotten done. But there was never much of a concern that it was going to affect the team on the field.
Well, truthfully, once the kicking situation in Denver got settled with Matt Prater, I mean, you pretty much knew what the parameters were of the deal for Scobie.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, I don't know the exact – I mean,
you're pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly – when something like that happens, that breaks down the door and it – it gives you something to use, and then you give them a little more, a little less, however you feel about it.
So people are looking at the same situation now with Maurice Jones-Drew in a week in which Ray Rice in Baltimore and Matt Forte in Chicago have gotten deals done, and your take on whether...
Well, it's easy to look at it and think, same situation. Couldn't be more different because Josh was a free agent, and the bottom line is Maurice isn't. So that's where the similarity ends. We can all talk publicly, and we will, about how, okay, Maurice is now underpaid by this or X or Y or Z, but within the dynamics of this dispute, I guess you would call it, all that stuff really doesn't matter because the Jaguars see Maurice having a two-year deal. And that's where, you know, people are talking about upper hand and negotiation and throwing out those words, but there's really not that because there's no... This is not a deal where there's a bargaining table. I don't see much movement from the team, and I think Maurice will be in sometime early in training camp. Will he be in the first couple of days? I'd be a little surprised. But I think he'll be in because he's going to play, and he's going to play for this team. And just like we just said about Josh Scobie, you've known Maurice far longer than I have.
He's not going
he ain't
to
gonna
not,
tank it.
Right.
And A, he's got too much personal pride. B, once he gets in town, he's got too much team pride.
Sure.
Now, will he be upset with the organization and philosophical for not paying? Sure. But once he gets in town, the team becomes the other players and the coaches and what you're working toward. And I don't pretend to know Mojo as long as a lot of people around here do. I've known him for a year, and I don't get the impression that he would let anything stand in the way of being as good a player as he could possibly be. And it would just shock me if that affected him once the season starts.
Well, do you think maybe that Ray Rice's deal or Matt Forte's deal even works against him somewhat? Because they're kind of similar to the deal that Maurice
Ray
got.
Ray Rice's deal is a good deal and probably could be outlined as being better than Mojo's. Forte's deal is very similar to what Maurice got a few years back and really sort of shows you that Maurice, at the time he signed it, was well paid and was... You know, it was a good deal. And at the time, the Jaguars even sort of took a risk by releasing Fred Taylor and going with this when a lot of people around the league didn't think he was an every down back. He's since proved he is, of course. But, you know, Maurice got a good deal at the time. And would he have gotten more had he played out his deal and been a threat to hit the open market? Perhaps. But, you know, we're not playing perhaps now. He's got a deal for a couple of years, and I just, you know, you talk to people around here, I do too. I don't get any impression that there's any sort of a feeling of, well, if he holds out for 3 weeks, we're going to pay him. It's not a part of the conversation.
My concern is if he holds out for a prolonged period of time, you know what happens to these guys. They come in, hamstring, right?
True.
ACL. I mean, something happens that throws the whole season off whack.
Yeah, and I would be more concerned if he was a quarterback or a wide receiver, because I would think they would be...
Well, from a timing perspective.
Yeah, timing perspective. I think I would trust Maurice to be in shape when he comes in. And I would trust him to be able to pick up what's going on.
But you know what I'm saying? Time and again, you see these guys who hold out. I mean, Jimmy Smith, when he had his holdout, came in, and he was he had some hamstring issues.
True. And, you know, that's the risk. And I'm always hesitant to predict the future on something like that.
Sure.
But it's certainly a risky run, and it's a concern. I just don't get the feeling. I would be surprised if the holdout is long enough to have that come into play. I would be surprised if it's an August 25th type deal. I think it'll be early August. And that's just a guess. He may prove me wrong. That would just be my guess.
You know, he was the league's leading rusher last year. He was the lone spark on this offense for most of the season. And he is a dynamic player. I mean, a guy who makes things happen. And yet, I'm going to say it, I think Rashad Jennings is a pretty good player.
Yeah,
I know he's not Maurice Jones-Drew, but you can run the ball with him. If you're turning to a passing attack anyway, you can run the ball with him.
Maurice deserves credit on so many levels that you can't just say this is why he's important.
Right.
But a huge reason why he's important, especially at that position, is with a few exceptions, you know he's going to be there. And you not only know he's going to be there, you know he's going to get you 85. You know he's going to get you 78. You know, he very rarely has a 30-yard game where it's just terrible. He's productive on a weekly basis, and he's always there, and you always know what you're going to get. With Rashad, you don't know that yet. So if you knew for sure that Rashad was going to give you 16 games, if you had had that sort of a history yet, then I would be more apt to say what you're saying. That's the biggest thing to me that Mojo brings in this is, I've been there, I've done it, I've shown. Even when I was hurt in 2010, I guess it was, I got it done on the field, and I gave you reliability. Sometimes it was spectacular, sometimes it was workmanlike, but somehow I figured out a way to give you that. And that's a thing that not...
Yeah, but that and there's the linchpin here to this whole thing is, how long can he continue to do that?
Well, that's the thing that you know, and
that's where the paycheck comes
in. And that would be the Jaguar. You know, I don't know if there's even any arguments, but that would be, you know, from the Jaguars' point of view, they're saying how much, you know, they could be saying how much longer is that going to be the case. And from Maurice's point of view, to himself, he's saying, how much longer is this going to be the case? So that's why he's feeling a sense of urgency to get this done now. So that's why, in every dynamic where you're going to have a long-term, intense argument, you're going to have two good arguments, and there are two good arguments in this case.
Well, I'm just interpreting the confidence in not speaking publicly and not going after it and trying to, you know, make everyone happy. The confidence that the offense, and Mike Mularkey obviously is bringing a different style of offense, I'm interpreting the confidence that they're showing in at least some part to the confidence they have in what Jennings is capable of doing.
And I think you're going to see, I mean, a Mularkey's offense, a running back is important. I don't think it's going to be as overwhelmingly important as it has been in the past. So there could be a part of that, too, of, you know, we're not going to be just focused on this one running back. I think even when Maurice does get in, I think you're going to see more backs get more carries. I don't think you're going to see another season where he is getting the ball 95% of the time.
Sure.
So that probably also plays into it of, it's not going to be Maurice Jones-Drew and 10 other guys on offense this year. That's not their plan.
All right, Joe.
All right, Brian. This portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Football Fanatics.
Joe, anything witty to say?
No.
Why start now?
What was the final score of the Phillies game?
They're still playing.
Okay. What inning?
Bottom of the 10th, it's 3-2. Phillies.
All right.
It was 3-1. They're slowly blowing.
Will the game be over by the time our show is?
I don't know. I may have to stay.
Watching it. All right, folks. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. I guess the other piece of news is Justin Blackmon's contract, to some small degree, the punter, Brian Anger.
Right.
But that'll get done by the time we get to camp.
Yeah, I think it'll get – my guess is it gets done right in the final day before camp. And they're just apart, and they, you know, there's an issue that, you know, you can't put in very many incentives for a punter in the same way that you can offense or defensive player, and that's a CBA deal, not really a Jaguars deal. So it becomes tough to try to make the punter happy, and many of the punter's representatives, whatever's happening there, it's tough to satisfy that. So it'll go up to the very end, and then it'll, you know, at some point it'll be, look, you know, well, we got to get in camp, and they will. Blackmon's deal will be more difficult and could extend a little beyond that for obvious reasons, for the off-field reasons.
There's about a dozen first-round picks that aren't signed yet.
Yeah, and I think you'll see most of those, now that Griffin is signed, I think you'll see most of those go off in pretty regular order between now and the start of camp. The issue with Blackmon is going to be that the – You know, the Jaguars are clearly going to – he's going to have a contract eventually where if he plays to it, if he's on the field, if everything goes great, where he'll make as much as he would have anyway. The issue becomes, obviously, they, you know, the Jaguars are going to want to not give as much up front because they're not – you know, they're off-field concerns now. So the push and pull of that – is obviously going to be what delays it, and it could delay it a few days into camp. You know, I have no idea what the timetable will be because you can't predict it. I wouldn't be surprised if that went a few days into camp because of that issue.
Well, his court date's next week, and I'm looking for it right now. It's going to be right up before the start of training camp,
right,
obviously, and trying to get a contract done without knowing exactly what a situation is going to be is going to be tricky. So.
Yeah, I don't know that the court date itself will have as much to do as sort of the, you know, the tug and push of exactly how much he's going to get up front, because, you know, when you've got agents involved, the agents are concerned about how this is going to play out and how it's going to look to other players on down the line, and they're worried about other agents being able to use this. I think Jeff talked about this last week, other agents being able to use this against them when they're trying to recruit players. I mean, it becomes a lot of, you know, I want to look good so that I can go recruit guys later on down the road. You'd like to think that doesn't come into play. It does come into play.
You bet it does.
So it's going to be an issue. I don't think he'll be out long enough for it to affect him on the field. I can't see it being a, you know, 2 or 3 week holdout. But in this case, you would think that the agent would want to fight it for a while, if nothing else than to show he did. It's
sure.
That sort of thing. Hey, I fought. I got the best I could. This is all we can do.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. What other storylines do you open camp with in your notebook?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, until Maurice is here...
Yeah, that's at the top.
Even when you want to focus on on-field stuff, that has to be a major story because it's, you know, it's your Pro Bowl player not here. Obviously, Gabbert, you know, the quarterback. I think the quarterback here for people here in town is a different storyline than it is nationally. There's a perception nationally, for some reason, that it's a Henny Gabbert battle. This is no disrespect to Chad, but the story is how good is Gabbert going to be? Because there's no sense around here that it's
a competition.
Yeah, I mean, and again, when you say that, it sounds like you know you're dissing what Chad has done. That's not the case. But Gabbert is the guy until something happens pretty drastic, you know, to make that different. That said, obviously his storyline in camp, you know, you can't ignore it. That's the major storyline along with Justin Blackmon.
Mike Mularkey starts his radio show next Monday, 6:06, Monday night. Right, Joe?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, my first question to him, and I'd love your opinion on this, is you've got a young quarterback who is your franchise quarterback. It'll be your first look at him.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be his first off season heading into a preseason. Do you play him longer, play him more in the preseason games, or do you take the same cautious approach that you take with your frontline starters, and that is ease him in game one, work him a bit in game two, a little more extended in game three, and then sit out game four?
My guess is you may not get the sit out in game four. You might get a series or two longer, but I don't know that you want to drastically change what a normal NFL routine would be, because this is such a routine league that, you know, I don't know that you want to play him for three quarters in each of the first three preseason games, because nobody does that.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but right. I would wonder if you might play him the first half of the first two games.
You know, I've seen situations where coaches have said, okay, I'm going to, you know, if it looks good for a couple of series, then I'm going to play him a couple of series. If it doesn't look good a couple of series, then I'll give him two more. You know, you don't extend that out indefinitely, but you could see a situation where I'm going to give it four. And if I see it in two, if things feel good, then we'll pull them and get the guys in. So, but it's definitely an interesting question. I don't think you go the extreme. I had somebody write in and ask me, why don't they just play the starters the entire game, the first three games, and then sit them out in the last one?
Because it's evaluation.
Right. I don't think you go to that extreme. And fans and a lot of media often miss the point of preseason, which is
evaluation.
You're evaluating the entire roster, and right. You can't just it's not fair, it's not accurate to do that in just one game. So I think you'll see them I'd be surprised if they stray very far from the norm, if for no other reason than the perception of Blaine inside the building is different than his outside the building. Unless things are going wrong, they like what they see. And if they see good progression, if they see solid stuff, they're not going to not believe that, if you follow me. You know, and so I don't think they feel an incredible need to get a huge amount of reps more than normal.
Well, there's one other factor, and that is, you know, their work this offseason was so regimented by the CBA. It was so, for lack of a better word, restricted. I mean, there was very little they could do. And so now you've got a chance, and training camps in a way the same way.
Sure.
The amount of time they can spend on the field and hitting and all of that.
Right.
So now you've got them in a game situation, and you really haven't had a chance to see a ton of that live stuff. I would think that the pull would be strong. Let's leave him in another series or two, and let's see how he does.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise you to see half, most of three quarters, and then a couple of series in the fourth.
Yeah. Which is a little bit different, you know. I mean, a third, fourth year. Matt Ryan's going to play a first quarter, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously he's a different quarterback.
Sure.
He's got that underneath his belt. So, just I think that's going to be an interesting conversation for Coach Malarkey.
And my understanding is, you know, talking about the coaching staff, they really liked what they saw from Blaine Gabbert. And I definitely got the feeling that feeling was mutual. About 3 or 4 weeks into camp, I can recall sitting out, and several of the media members were talking to Blaine after one of the practices. And we probably talked about it on Jaguars this week. The difference in his confidence talking to us, the difference in the way he was carrying himself, just acting like the guy. And I know that's not everything in a quarterback, but it's something you want to see. And I thought it was pretty significant that he could go through the rookie year that he went, get hammered publicly, hammered nationally, and still feel pretty good about his standing within the team, feel good about where he is, have the confidence. That year could have shaken a lot of guys, and I don't get the feeling it shook Blaine. That's a good sign.
All right, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. One more segment of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live here at Everbank Field. Brian and John and John and this gentleman, Joe. All right, one segment left of Jaguars This Week. Last Wednesday of the Dead Zone. Next week, obviously, we will be ramping up for the start of camp. And when does the two-hour version start? I think we've got, what, two more? Two more 1 hours, and then the 8th, I believe, is the date that we go to. So next week is an hour, the week after is an hour, and then we kick it up to 2 hours on the 8th of August.
Double the fun.
Here you go. So let's shift gears to the other side of the ball. What are you hearing about Terrence Knighton and his ability to participate in training camp?
I think they feel good about it. I think with anybody who's injured or who's had an injury, realistically, the first week of camp is going to be you know, slow, quote-unquote, limited. You're not going to be silly and just throw a guy right in. You know, Terrence's thing has been, you know, since this happened, everybody's known the issue is going to be how quickly he can put maximum pressure, a maximum effort, and withstand the pressure on the eye. Beyond that, everything is so much has gone so much better than they thought it would when it first happened. My understanding is his vision's great. He feels great about it, and he's progressed much faster than they thought he would. It's not 100% sure thing until he actually gets out and starts doing those football things that could potentially put pressure on the eye. But it's as good as it could possibly be at this point. And I think overall the feeling is that he'll be ready.
And the guy right next to him, Tyson Alualu, had the surgery
right
in the offseason. Remember, that was they were going to wait, and then they had the surgical procedure.
Right.
And that's obviously another guy that we'll spend a lot of time watching to see if his explosiveness is back.
Yeah, and I think he'll be another example of, probably limited to start. And when guys are limited to start, it's going to be a story, and everybody's going to say, well, what's wrong? It's pretty common if you've had any sort of offseason surgery to start training camp slow, just because there's no reason not to.
Paul Posluszny, Rasheen Mathis, these other guys, they're all going to be in that.
Right. It'll be a working their way back in process, because most of those guys are veterans. You're not worried that they don't know how to play. They know the plays. They know what to do. It's a matter of making sure they're as ready for the season as possible.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. I think that'll be an interesting storyline to follow, though, that defense coming back. And they were
sure.
Sixth last year, obviously. And you've got the majority of the coaching staff back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got, obviously, the coordinator, the D-line coach, the linebackers coach, and you got a new secondary coach who the coordinator's very familiar with from his days
right.
in Ohio. And just to see this group and see whether the continuity is there or whether they're better, whether they're different. Because Jack Del Rio had a thumbprint, you know, that he wanted a way he wanted the defense to play.
Right.
And now, maybe more than ever, I mean, this defense belongs to the defensive coordinator, Mel.
Yeah, and I think realistically it did last year too. And so I don't anticipate much of a stylistic difference. I when the players talk about this defense, they talk about Mel. You know, they know it's his scheme. He sets the tone, his energy. Everybody saw when he was the interim coach last year. His approach really sets the tone. I've said several times this offseason, I think the defense will be as good or better than it was last year. I don't necessarily know that means ranking sixth. I don't know if they were the sixth best defense in the NFL last year. What I do know is far more often than not, they played well enough to give this team a chance to win. In this day and age of offensive football, I think that's what you want from your defense. And I think they'll rely on that again this year. I don't see why they wouldn't be that sort of defense again. And that's really what you want, even beyond the ranking. Okay, they ranked sixth. But were they good enough to keep you in the game? I would argue that this defense last year, most of the season, played well enough that if the offense had played, you know, to any sort of a better level, that the team would have had a lot of chances to win. That's what you look for from a defense.
One other guy on the defensive side coming back, and they sat him down, you know, after the Cleveland game last year. That's Clint Session,
mm-hmm.
who's a guy you know. And there was a little bit made, you know, when the story about him being in that very progressive concussion rehabilitation mm-hmm. program at Pitt, the University of Pittsburgh. And so, you know, thoughts on him. I mean, you wrote it today. When Russell Allen's in there, it's not a huge drop-off.
Right. Well, and, you know, I think that's something to watch in training camp. And, you know, Clint was brought back slowly during OTAs. He missed the last few sessions of OTAs because I think they're trying to be smart with a concussion. You know, the reality is that's 4 months four or five months after the season, so I don't know that you can necessarily put that issue to bed yet. I think you want to watch it. I think you want to see how everything sort of plays out. I don't have any reason to think that he won't be in the starting lineup and playing, but if he's not, I think they're in good shape with Russell Allen there. And I know the players and coaches, that's a unique situation that Clint's an impact guy. But I don't get the idea that if Russell's playing, that there's a whole lot of people on the defense going, whoa, what's going to happen now? I mean,
sure.
I think it's, yeah, Russell's playing. But I think they feel like they've got four starters there.
Well,
I think it's the best way to put it.
Especially with Troy Polamalu's admission on the Dan Patrick Show that he lied about symptoms of concussion so that he could stay on the field. I don't know whether you're familiar with that, but
right.
He said, you know, sure, I lied about it. Absolutely wanted to play.
And if you recall, Maurice sort of touched on something along those lines late in the season that I forget exactly what he said, but it was to the point that that's sort of an issue now, that players could do that because
they want to play.
They want to play, and they also know, and I'm in no way putting words in Maurice's mouth, but he discussed this issue along these lines last year. And the issue is it does push players to potentially not tell the truth because you don't want to get pigeonholed as a concussion guy either. So that's something that's going to play out, I think, over the next couple of years, and I think it's going to be more of a story. I don't think Polamalu will be the last guy to bring that up.
Oh, no. No, most of the guys will probably have that conversation at one point or another.
And you can understand
with
why.
Each other.
Right.
Oh, for sure.
And it's very easy to understand why.
Well, and obviously teams are going to err on the side of caution, not just for the investments they've made in players like Clint Session, but you've got lawsuits that have been filed, and a lot of retired former players are joining these lawsuits, and you got to.
And if you're a free agent in your last year of a contract and you get a concussion with three games to go in the season, there's a lot of incentive to lie about it because you don't want your next team worried about you having a concussion.
Yeah.
I don't know that that'll happen. I think it's naive to think that it couldn't.
Anybody else on the defense that I've forgotten that's coming back from Nixon?
Well, Pozlesny, you mentioned it. Yeah. I mean, he'll be in. An interesting thing to watch, is going to be Rasheen and Aaron Ross. I think by the time it plays out early in the season, I think Rasheen will be starting.
But in this division, with the receiving cores that you see.
Yeah, you need three cornerbacks.
Right.
So I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of difference between starter and reserve there.
And
or starter and nickel guy, I'm sorry.
No, that's just the way the league has become.
Right.
And Ross is a solid guy who, brings championship credentials in here.
And I thought he looked good in OTAs.
Yeah.
I mean, LaRon Robinson, I'm sorry. You can tell they're veterans who know what's going on. I don't think there's much of a danger of those being free agent guys who don't contribute. And that's, you expect that when you sign a free agent, but both of those guys have the look of guys who are going to contribute.
All right, the Dead Zone's over, folks. We have plenty to talk about starting next Monday night with the Mike Mularkey Show right here on News Talk WOKV and across the Jaguars Radio Network. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, John. Thanks, John. Have a great night, everybody.
WOKV AMG.